No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to The Show For You, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red.
On this edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, we recorded on Tuesday night, and so some of the information we talk about with the Arizona Cardinals coaching search became outdated very quickly, as Wednesday morning the news came out that Mike Munchak turned down the second interview request the Cardinals had, and Keith Armstrong, the special teams coordinator for the Atlantic Falcons, will be getting a second interview. Armstrong had previously kind of disappeared as a candidate. So we're going to talk a lot about Mike Munchak and what he would have meant, which is still kind of the questions still are there. And we don't discuss anything about Armstrong. So sit back, listen to the show, and just know that when we recorded this, we did not have any of the information yet about Munchak or Armstrong. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, episode 181. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today sports media group, NFL Wire site, covering the Arizona Cardinals, and my co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's NFL site for the Arizona Cardinals as well. And this is a show with no news, right, Seth? Because we don't know anything more than we really did before, do we?
I mean, we know names. I don't know if we know anything about those names still, but we know names, and you know, that's interesting. We know who's in the Super Bowl, and then we also know who's not, allegedly not going to be the Arizona Cardinals' next head coach. So, I mean, we know something, but honestly, we really know nothing.
And so we're going to talk about in this show, we're just going to continue on with the whole, we're not talking about Bruce Arians and his retirement. We're going to talk about the process to replace Bruce Arians as the coaching search continues. 9 candidates interviewed. Nothing. I mean, and here's the thing that's happening right now. And Mike Jarecki said, the Cardinals facility is on lockdown. There are apparently no leaks. Nobody is talking from within the Cardinals organization. And it sounds like anything that comes across nationally is coming from the other team involved. So Michael Bidwill says they've interviewed 9 guys. They're going to do it. They're taking their time. They're going for a second round of interviews. And we think there are 4 guys available. The 4 guys that are moving on. There was 4 to 5 based on what we were doing before, what we heard last week, that it looked like it was going to be 4, maybe 5 guys. Pat Shurmur, Steve Wilks, Brian Flores, Mike Munchak, and perhaps James Betcher were the names. Since then, one name is allegedly off the table, and so before we get into that, because basically we're just going to talk about the coaching search, what's going on. We're going to talk about the different candidates that remain, the pros, the cons, the concerns, the questions, and so that's what we're going to focus on in this show. And before we get started, we've got to let you know, of course, of our sponsor who supports the show, which is Harrys.com. I made the switch at Harry's. If you're looking for a great shave at an incredibly great price, Harrys.com is the way to go. You get high quality razors at a really high quality, at a really low price. They're better quality than the cheap disposable blades, much cheaper and definitely comparable in quality to the more expensive ones. I was doing the electric razor. I don't regret going back to shaving regularly with the blades. And like I've said before, 3 million guys have made the change. You can too. It's a great shave. You won't regret it. And you listeners of the Rise Up C-Rep podcast get a special offer where you can get a trial kit. You get the blade, you get the handle, you get the foaming shave gel, you get that for covering the cost of shipping is $3. Test it out. It's harrys.com/cred. Again, harrys.com/cred. And you'll get that trial set for free, just covering for the $3 for shipping, and test it out. You won't regret it. I made the change. It's great. harrys.com/cred. Seth, let's go ahead and get started. But let's talk about the one guy we know is not going to be the Cardinals coach, at least by all reports. It's always expected. Nothing is for certain because obviously Pat Shurmur is still employed by the Minnesota Vikings, and the Minnesota Vikings, thanks to a miracle play, are still alive in the playoffs. And so Pat Shurmur can't be interviewed by anyone, but apparently will go to the New York Giants. How do you feel about that? Because for me, he was the guy I liked in terms of a match and checking up boxes. I liked him the most for the Cardinals.
Yeah, and you know, and I kind of wrote about this today, and it's obvious. The Cardinals roster as is makes it difficult for a coaching candidate to look at it and go, this is the team for the next 4 or 5 years that I can grow with. And the simple reason, and maybe it's too simplistic, is that they just don't have a quarterback. And when you literally have no quarterback under contract right now, have anything to offer this coach as a future. And so, you know, some people are saying that's a positive. They can bring in the guy they want. Well, it's not like they can just go say, hey, Aaron Rodgers, come play quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals. They still have to be able to trade for the agency or draft the quarterback that they like. And the Cardinals have not a ton of cap space. Trading is, you know, Steve Keim shown a penchant to be able to pull off deals for veterans, but he hasn't shown a desire to trade up in the draft to acquire a key player. So the two of the three avenues seem less than likely for a head coach. So when you look at it, it kind of makes sense that Shurmur would pick New York over Arizona, if that's, you know, really what happens.
Well, and talent-wise, it makes sense, too, because if you're an offensive guy, I mean, it's one thing to go into a situation and be able to overhaul the offense. The Cardinals have David Johnson, Larry Fitzgerald, maybe Larry Fitzgerald, and suspect offensive line. I mean, you've got DJ Humphreys, so you've got yourself a left tackle, but you've got questions along the offensive line. You have not so much talent that you can count on at receiver. Tight end is, I mean, you say what you want about the tight end position. So there's questions across the board as opposed to Minnesota and New York, who doesn't have an offensive line, but they do have potentially, you know, got one of the most talented receivers in the league. You've got Eli Manning there who's aging, but they also have draft picks. They got the number 2 pick. I mean, they're going to, if you want a situation for quarterback, you've got a potential Hall of Famer already in place, and you can basically get your pick of quarterbacks in the draft. So, hey, it's great. That's a much better spot if that's what you're looking for. Now, did I want Pat Shurmur? Yes, because for the Cardinals, you kind of knew built in there was going to be one of those Minnesota quarterbacks coming over, with its Teddy Bridgewater, which gives you a young option. You don't know. Now, more than likely, it probably would have been Sam Bradford, because that would be, you know, the fourth time around for Shurmur and Bradford. And it's worked so far. He was there in St. Louis when they drafted him. He was in Philadelphia when Philly traded for him. He was in Minnesota when Minnesota traded for Bradford as well, even though he wasn't the offensive coordinator at the time. And so it seemed like wherever Shurmur went was probably Bradford was going to end up, which gave you at least a year or two to be, you have a talented guy who hasn't reached a ceiling. Maybe he had the chance to do that. And you like that you've seen over a course of many years and many teams where he takes an offense and builds it and improves it. And then it would be a matter of, well, who does he bring in to play defense? And so no longer think I thought Shermer was the best match, but you don't want to hire a guy that doesn't, that isn't the favorite place. You don't want him longing to hire, go to a different team.
Well, but to, you know, be fair, and I'm not disagreeing with you, but to be fair, remember, it's not like Arizona was Arian's first choice. I don't want to say screwed over by the Chicago Bears, but they completely botched that situation because, remember, he thought he was getting that job.
And true. Then he only wanted to do it his way, and he wasn't gonna do with whatever staff. You know, if I'm coming to come in, I want my own staff. Give me staff control.
And so, you know, but yeah, I mean, but again, Shermer goes into a situation with, you know, Odell Beckham Jr., but not only that, but you look at Sterling Shepard, a very talented wide receiver, dynamic this year as a rookie. We talked about their offensive line issues, much like the Arizona Cardinals. They've invested heavily and had little return. So, but you kind of hit it on the head. This is 2016 Arizona Cardinals if Bruce Arians would have stepped away last year. I mean, sure, they're 3-13 instead of 7-8-1, but you're talking about a team that's got an aged quarterback in place that says, I'll be here one or two more years. I mean, that's what Eli Manning is alleging at this point, is that he'll be there for one or two more years. So now the only difference is they theoretically have their pick. I mean, obviously they don't have the first pick, but they'll know beforehand whether or not Sam Darnold is worth trading up for, or Josh Rosen, and you know, is worth trading up for, or maybe they're Shermer's, you know, guy is Baker Mayfield or whatever, but they'll have their pick. And again, the Cardinals can't offer that, and that's fine. They don't have to offer that. But if from a standpoint of Pat Shermer, it makes sense to go to New York, where you have those pieces in place, and then you have an option to make, you know, kind of the guy that you're gonna sink or swim with, your pick.
And so that's the one guy that we know the Cardinals allegedly won't get. I mean, there's other guys that are set to go. Matt Patricia supposedly going to go to Detroit. You've got Josh McDaniels headed to Indy, allegedly. Shermer now to New York. And you got Matt Nagy, who's official in Chicago, and leaving the Cardinals with the guys that they have left on their list. So coming up next on Rise to Sea, we'll talk about some of those guys, some of those names who are left. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red. Time to talk about the possibilities that they have. And I think at this point that the names that seem to be out there, there were two names reported on Tuesday as to targets or favorites or guys the Cardinals are submitting for second interviews. That would be the Steelers and Mike Munchak, their offensive line coach. And a name that reemerged to me was a surprise. Reemerged is John DeFilippo. The quarterback's coach for the Philadelphia Eagles. Obviously, they can't talk with him at least for another week because they're still in the playoffs. Munchak can speak at any time. But the report went from Ian Rappaport on Tuesday was that they were filing requests for those second interviews. And other than that, those are the only new two names that came up. The other names in play are allegedly Steve Wilks, Carolina Panthers defensive coordinator, Brian Flores, linebackers coach for the Patriots, and then maybe James Betcher, though his name has really not – he's just been called the best in-house candidate. I haven't read any or heard anything whereas he is moving on to the next round. Let's talk about Mike Munchak, who seems to be right now sort of maybe the favorite. He is probably the least, in terms of Cardinals fans, the least exciting candidate. Would you agree?
Yeah, he is. I mean, he's another aged coach, 57. He's been described as boring by the Tennessee media and people that covered him. honest, his teams were boring and nondescript when he was in Tennessee. It's not like they're exactly exciting. So when you look at Munchak, it's, you know, a lot of it is this idea of that it's kind of more the same. It's another Pittsburgh guy, oh, here we go again, you know, type thing, as opposed to looking at him maybe in a positive light that you and I have talked about off air of, you know, maybe he's learned from the first time, but two, maybe he's a guy that, you know, he's not going to come in and want to call plays. He's never done it. He's obviously going to have an influence and work on the offensive line, a unit that is one of the, you know, he's coached one of the best units in the NFL in Pittsburgh. And he's a guy that's going to defer to his coordinators. And that's where I think the other problems may come into play that we've, you know, kind of talked about here, is that sometimes they're just a little too loyal to their coordinators, and you know, that's why Munchak was let go of Tennessee.
And for me, the one thing that I have not gotten caught up on the discussion is offensive minded, defensive minded coaches. And to me, I told you this off the air, I don't care which it is unless that guy is calling plays. It was important for Bruce Arians. He wasn't off, but he became the play caller. If James Betcher is hired, who's his defensive coordinator? He might not be calling plays, but offensive defensive minded to me is unimportant completely unless they are the play caller. Sean McVay calling plays. And it's kind of the trend to do that. However, that's not definitely not a prerequisite for a coach to be the guy that calls plays. The coach has to be the game planner. The coach is the big vision, the philosophy of the team, and then the leader of men. Munchak is incredibly respected throughout the league. Borderline, I mean, you could say perhaps a Hall of Fame career. Is he a Hall of Famer? I don't think he is. Is he? That's yes, the one he thing. Is. He is my Hall of Fame Hall of Famer offensive lineman. Played two decades practically. He's been coaching offensive lines. He's well respected. He's been a head coach, and that's one of the things, you know. There's something to be had about hiring someone who's been there before. So the idea of a retread isn't necessarily a bad thing. He had 3 years under his belt. He got a taste. He's not been a coordinator otherwise, but he's had a taste of what it means to run a team. You get a guy who hasn't been a coordinator or has barely been a coordinator, and because even Bruce Arians said there was a learning curve when he was interim coach over in India, which was really perfect for him. It was kind of the perfect warm-up to taking over a team. But you have a guy who's done it before, who knows you have to organize practice. You have to set up your practice schedule. You have to set up kind of your offensive philosophy to communicate that with your staff defensively as well. And you know, I'm not saying he's the best guy for the job, but I certainly wouldn't complain about it. But ultimately it comes down to, for me, for most head coaches, who are they going to bring on their staff? Are they going to bring someone in who can – and even then, you know, they throw the name out there. What if Todd Haley comes? Well, what if he keeps Betcher? I don't know. I mean, we've seen time – and even then, I'm waver as to be super, super excited one way or another, because – there certainly wasn't much excitement about Todd Bowles statistically when Bruce Arians brought him in. The defenses he coached were statistically not that good. What did he do when he came here? When he had a bunch of talent? Put together a dynamic defense. You know, Todd Haley, I mean, that first year in Kansas City, I mean, with Arizona, fantastic. Went to Kansas City that first year. They make the playoffs, but after that, when you don't have quite as much talent, it wasn't as good. And they go to Pittsburgh, where you have some of the most talented offensive players in the league. They put up numbers. Yeah. Some coordinators, some coaches, I mean, it's a matter of how much talent you have. And we know the defense is talent. Can the new coach along with Steve Keim, restock the talent offensively.
Well, and that's my concern with Munchak and Todd Haley. And if you had Carson Palmer in tow, and you had, you know, all and John Brown was still John Brown, and you know, your third wide receiver was J.J. Nelson or an up and coming, I think you're okay. But you're, you know, we've talked about this before. You're going into an off season where you literally don't know who your wide receivers next year are going to be. I mean, we're hopeful it's Larry Fitzgerald, but we don't know. You have no idea who your quarterback is. You know who your left tackle, your tight end, and your running back are. And after that, you could guess at the eight other positions, but you don't
know. Well, and even at tight end, you don't necessarily – I mean, you know, except for the fact that Gresham's going to come off an Achilles tear, so he's probably not going to be ready for the season.
Oh, yeah, because I forgot how long that takes, too. So
it's, yeah, so even if he comes back, he's not going to be good until maybe the end of the year.
And he could, I mean, not that I think he will, but he could walk away, right? I mean, he can walk away because he's guaranteed money, like, that's already kind of kicked down the road. So you look at it from that kind of perspective and everything. And if you knew who your coaches were or your players were, I don't think Todd Haley is a bad hire. But what has Todd Haley done in terms of building an offense that tells you that he is the right guy for the job? That's where my question comes in. And I'm not saying that or is, except when you look at Minnesota last year to this year, I thought, you know, and you hit it. That's what made it, you know, it kind of made it exciting, was that Shurmur rebuilt, was a part of that rebuild of that Vikings offense. Haley's never really rebuilt an offense, so what is he gonna do there? Betcher, I mean, at least you know what you're getting, right? I mean, I think that's the 100% best thing you can say about that. But I have my concerns with Betcher as well. You 100% focused. And is he going to be okay with coming back as the DC? I mean, that's something that nobody's really talked about, is like, is he going to go, okay, I'll be a DC again after, you know, he feels like he's a candidate for the job and should be, you know, a guy for the job. Well, that's always an issue and concern.
And like was with Ray Horton, because we went through this exact same process with Ray Horton before they hired Bruce Arians, and Arians was very clear. As much as he loves Horton, he didn't want him on the staff because he wanted there to be completely united. And it seems that there might be a desire to keep Betcher around, but unless he's, you know, the only guy for me, really, that I think would be almost a guarantee that he stays on as DC is if they were looking at Chuck Pagano, because he'd already worked for Chuck Pagano before. He hasn't worked under any other coach in the NFL other than Pagano and Arians. So that's the one thing that, you know, you can say that, you know, maybe Munchak will bring in a Betcher. Maybe we'll keep Betcher. How comfortable will be that relationship? Because Ken Whisenhunt, when he was hired, the Cardinals wanted to keep on Clancy Pendergast, and I think that was in part because of the contract situation, but he got rid of him as soon as he possibly could after the 2008 season and wanted to get his guy on. Going to be interesting to see how that plays out, but as we're going to find out with each one of these candidates, there's some definite question marks. Shurmur had, I think, for me, the fewest question marks. You know, Munchak, obviously, he doesn't move the dial for anyone. He doesn't move the dial really for anyone at all, other than maybe in the building and for the football people. I think he would have the players buy in early just because he's a Hall of Famer. And he's been playing, he's been coaching in the NFL forever. So I don't think you'd have to run across that. The question is, can he maintain success and accountability the way Arians was able to do so? So you got questions on Munchak. Coming up on Rise Up See Red Talk next, let's look at the next coach, and we'll talk about John DeFilippo coming up next on Rise Up See Red. We're back on Rise Up See Red. John DeFilippo is the name that reemerged as a candidate, as a possibility, but he doesn't come. He comes with definite concerns too, does he not?
I think the biggest concerns with DeFilippo are going to be, you know, what did he learn in his year as an OC at Cleveland, and can he manage a team, and would he be willing to not be the OC? Because, you know, you talked about it, these guys, he's had one season as an OC, and that's good to know. But it's not like he's been doing it for years. It's not like he's been game planning for years. I know he is in charge of the red zone offense for the Eagles, so situation. But is he a guy that's going to want to come in and prove himself as more than just like a head coach? Is he and quarterback guy? Is he going to want to prove himself as a offensive guru and want to be the game planner and play caller? Because that seems overwhelming for anybody, let alone a guy that's been an OC for only one season, 3 years ago? And like, it seems like a lot. And that's my concern with DeFilippo, is that he's just going to want to be prove himself too much, instead of saying, look, I'm a 39-year-old NFL head coach. That's all I need to be. I don't need to be this, you know, I don't need to be Sean McVay. I don't need to be John Gruden. I can be somebody else.
And you have the questions, well, who is his offensive staff? Who's his defensive? What is his philosophy? You look at that. What is his philosophy? At least when you have someone like Shurmur, you've got a track record. With Mike Munchak, you know what he is. He is kind of an old school ball. You know, if to me, Munchak, in a way, is a better version of Harold Goodwin, a more experienced version of Harold Goodwin, who's been through the NFL ranks. Same type of guy. They want a ball control offense. They want to build that offensive line. They want to protect the quarterback and minimize, even if you have a great quarterback, Harold Goodwin would like to minimize what the quarterback had to do. That's Munchak. DeFilippo, he's worked with Derek Carr. He's worked with Carson Wentz and done some really good things with them. What is his offensive philosophy? Wait, how much of what the Eagles do is Doug Peterson, Frank Reich, and how much of it is DeFilippo, and how much does he want to change, do differently than what the Eagles do?
Right, and then the other thing is simply, where will his focus be with the team? Is he a guy that, like you said, is he going to delegate in from the staff? We've heard, I've heard a couple, you know, whispers that, one of his guys, I have to go back and look now. One of the names that we've heard is Matt Roth, who is the OC at, or not the OC, the wide receiver coach for the Philadelphia Eagles. Let me find, I've got the names here. I wrote them all down. DeFilippo. But yeah, when you look at it, like, who's he going to bring in? That's what people don't get about DeFilippo, is like, he doesn't have a huge coaching radius. And what Greg Gabriel from Pro Football Talk, I want to say, or I'm not sure where he works for at this point, but he was the one that said, okay, Mike Groh, sorry, or, and this one is not inspiring at all, Greg Knapp, who was an OC for the Oakland Raiders and not very good at it. So, and I'm pretty sure Knapp's been a bunch of other places too.
Knapp was the Raiders OC when DeFilippo was quarterbacks coach there, wasn't he?
Yeah. So
he was the Carson Palmer guy, which.
Yeah. Yeah, so exactly. So, but Mike Groh is the wide receivers coach, young guy in Philly. So, you know, that's the question is, do you go with a completely inexperienced staff or do you bring in a guy like Greg Knapp who's been a failure or maybe not, maybe that's a strong word, but hasn't done well in the situation. And then you're, and now that's who DeFilippo is aligning himself with. And you know, you've kind of brought it up. Munchak, these guys all need a strong infrastructure around them. I mean, all coaches do, but these guys especially, because they're not play callers. They're not guys that have, you know, necessarily done it before. Munchak's been a head coach, but he's not a guy that's going to come in and run one side of the ball. And so they're going to be delegating a lot, and so they have to nail these coaching hires, and that's the same for another guy that we'll talk about, you know, shortly. And so when you look at these younger guys, yeah, they're exciting. DeFilippo's very exciting because he seems like an excellent in terms of developing quarterback talent. He's obviously really good in the red zone. The Eagles had one of the better red zone offenses in the NFL in 2017, and he's the guy behind that. But again, his offense in Cleveland wasn't good. Let's just be completely honest. Now, it's a fair question, but his offense in Cleveland was not good. And then who does he bring with him? His DC that I've heard is interested in Philip Daniels, who's like a defense, like they're the Brinson Buckner of the Eagles. So, you know, it's a very young staff. I think they'd all be under 40 years old. So if you talk about a DeFilippo, Mike Groh, Philip Daniels staff, do you like the Eagles defense? Yeah. And their defensive line is NFL. So you obviously are going to be like, oh, that would be really good for Robert Kimdiche, right? Like that would be great. But again, that is not, you know, not being in the copycat, Mike Adams is a complete 180 from what anybody has really ever done. I mean, that is going from a geriatric home as your coaching staff, no offense to those guys, to, you know, water slides and ping pong tables and pool tables, you know, kind of the Google of coaching staffs. Like that's the changeover you're talking about with DeFilippo. And I don't mean this in a negative way. And I am posing this question to you. Do you really think Steve Keim has the guts to do something like that? Like, do you think he has the guts to say, I'm staking myself, pretty young guy, in terms of GM?
He is. He's relatively young.
You know, I'm staking myself to John DeFilippo, a Mike Groh, and a Philip Daniels staff. Like, that's who I'm staking. I just don't see it. It feels like they're going, you know, if they were going to go after DeFilippo, they're going to want a Greg Knapp type guy, a older guy that's been there, done that. And then like a Chuck Pagano type hire. And I'm not saying Pagano is a guy that can even be had by DeFilippo. I'm just putting a veteran defensive coordinator's name out there. But it feels like make that hire. Those were the names he would want as the coaches, not young guys.
And I think one of the reasons why Arians hit up, you know, the relationship was like big brother, little brother. And Arians was definitely the big brother. Keim, who was new to the position, was hit it off with a veteran coach who had never been a head coach except for his interim stint, but had been coaching forever. And I think that really made an impact on Keim over the last few years. And I think what we're going to see is over the next couple of years, we're going to see just exactly how many fingerprints Bruce Arians left on the organization and the philosophy for the Cardinals moving forward. Which leads me to think he would gravitate more towards, say, a Mike Munchak or someone with, it wouldn't have to be a strong personality, but someone that gives him that sort of comfort. And one of the things actually with I think what's the most genius thing about Bruce Arians was you get Bruce Arians, the guy, he put together such a diverse and fantastic staff, old, young. You know, he brought guys up from basically nothing. James Betcher, Todd Bowles brought in, give him basically, you run the keys to the defense and everything. I know you're ready. Harold Goodwin, who had been an offensive assistant, then an offensive line coach. You get OC. Larry Foote became a coach. You bring in Stump Mitchell. And there was just so much knowledge there. And that's where I'd be wary about a young staff, like a young coach with really young staff, because that's not going to, the one thing that I would fear with the locker room is that the one thing that the Arians and his staff had is because of the wealth of experience and knowledge that when there was adversity, they still could trust their coaching staff and knew exactly what they were doing because they'd been through it before. You bring in a young staff with young coordinators and young assistants, that voice is not going to ring as true to the players, I'm sure.
But it also is one of those things where they could bring in a new perspective and relate to the younger players. You wonder how a guy like Patrick Peterson would deal with somebody like Philip Daniels, who's, you know, a successful NFL player. You wonder how, you know, again, we don't have any offensive players, so I can't even talk. So we'll all just say how they would respond, you know, the defense responds to coach, because that is one thing that we know is that Arians was old, but he was Lindy's party guy old. He wasn't like, you know, 70, or he wasn't 65-year-old get off my lawn grandpa old. Like that's the difference
for him. He was a very forward thinking 60 something.
Right. I mean, his football designed in the 1970s with Don Coryell, but his love of the players and the way he treated his players like men. And I mean, that's one of the things that endeared the much was that he was honest and open. And I mean, you don't hear about coaches drinking beer or mixing cocktails in the parking lot after games with their players. And that's just because it's not something that happens in the NFL. And that was Bruce Arians. And so that, and you kind of, you know, piece that together. Yeah, that's going to be a huge change from a guy like John DeFilippo, and he's going to have some hurdles to overcome to reach those guys, especially when you look at it and the fact that, you know, Andy Lee and Phil Dawson are both older than him. So both going to be like, oh man, this guy. But no, I think you get on the right track with a guy like Sean McVay. Obviously the age thing doesn't matter. I mean, McVay's 31, 32 now, like whatever he's, you know, do you think he would not resonate with this Cardinals team? I don't know. I think a guy like Carson Palmer would have enjoyed having the youthful exuberance of a McVay to kind of pique his interest again in football. Not that Arians didn't, but you know, after 5 years, you get into a routine, and all of a sudden, you get a guy like Sean McVay, and oh man, this is different, right? So, that's the upside to him and the next gentleman we'll talk about.
Yes, and coming up next on Rise to See Red, we'll talk about the next young next young candidate for the Cardinals, a guy who still can't be interviewed. That's coming up next on Rise Up See Red. We're back on Rise Up See Red, and this name, after kind of sitting quietly for a while, Brian Flores has reemerged as a guy who is a strong candidate. Even so much, if you heard the radio Tuesday afternoon here locally, Arizona Sports Mike Jarecki, he said, for one, the Cardinals facility, I mentioned this at the beginning of the show, are basically on lockdown. So they're not saying anything at all. So from at least sources within the organization, there are none. They're not giving any clues. They're not giving any hints. However, Jarecki says that he thinks that right now that the number two behind Mike Munchak would actually be the guy with the least amount of experience in terms of coaching pedigree in Brian Flores, a guy who's only been a position coach. He's done a little bit of everything. He's coached them, he's coached defense, done offense, he's done some scouting, but as maybe the number two candidate, which is very, very interesting. He brings a lot of questions. However, he does have connections in the building. MJ noted that Adrian Wilson, in his 1 year that he was with the Patriots after the Cardinals let him go, he was injured all that year, but Flores was his position coach. MJ said there were other guys in the building who have worked with Flores. So you're going to look at... You're going to look at this, and Flores is just a big unknown, because what exactly do we know about him other than the fact that his name is one of the up and coming guys, and he doesn't have coordinator experience. Though if you think about it, he'd be a coordinator this year, and then maybe in a year or two potentially be up for a coaching position. So would it matter necessarily if he's got the coaching gene? Per se, would it matter if it's now or 2 years from now? I don't know, but there's just so much unknown about Flores.
Right, and the whole thing you like about Flores is, and I was talking to a buddy of mine about this, and he had some great numbers too that I'll share. But you talk about Flores, the things that you like are, you like the fact that every unit that he's coached with high turnover improves or plays well. Or, you know, you look at when he was the defensive backs coach for the Patriots, or heard of Malcolm Butler. That guy turned out pretty good. Everybody rolled their eyes when they picked Daron Harmon in the second round out of Rutgers and said, what are the Patriots doing? And now he's a football player. You look at what he's done and what he's kind of created there, and now he's with the linebackers, and they lost Jamie Collins and obviously Chandler Jones, and you know they had injuries to Dante Hightower, and they've got all these guys that honestly, like, when you look at the roster, you go, who are these guys? Like, you don't know. And that's kind of what is interesting to me about Flores, is he's continually churning out strong units and strong play, much in the way of, you know, anybody to help him. You look at, they're starting Kyle Van Noy, who was traded from the Detroit Lions, and somebody named Alandon Roberts, who I've honestly never heard of. They've got guys like David Harris, who's I think older than you, Marquis Flowers, who played at U of A as a safety. They got a kid named Nicholas Grigsby. I mean, you just look at the names that they're playing. Alandon Roberts, I thought so. He's a rookie. No, sorry, he's a second-year player. But, like, these guys, like, you've never heard of them. I mean, outside of Kyle Van Noy, you haven't heard of, or you didn't know that they were still playing in the NFL. And in Patriots linebacker core is so good every week. And then you look at this allegedly, and I'm trying to find a way to confirm this. I can't, but allegedly he calls the red zone defense for the Patriots. So from weeks 5 to 17 of the season, because we remember the Patriots struggled the first four games. I mean, there were legitimate questions about them as a team. So weeks 5 to 17, their opponents made 33 trips into the red zone. They kicked 9 field goals, touchdowns, and on 12 of the drives, they held the opponent to 0 points.
And that in terms of yards, they were one of the worst defenses in the league in yards allowed, and were one of the top 5 defenses in points scored. And you see those numbers bear out in the red zone.
Right. And so that's the thing, is when you look at Flores, when you talk about pedigree outside of not being a coordinator, he's literally done everything you can do in an NFL. Not only that, he's done it for the best organization in the NFL. I mean, let's just be honest about that. He's coached, or he's been a scout. He's coached special teams. He was coaching offense and then safeties and linebackers. And you just look at that kind of evolution, and, you know, he's the guy that he will apparently, if the Cardinals don't hire him, he will be the next defensive coordinator. And so in 2 years, when Tom Brady and the Patriots are at Super Bowl, 54, and playing against some other schmo team from the NFC that they're going to beat for his 7th or 8th Super Bowl title, everybody's going to want a piece of Flores. And that's kind of what you alluded to. Is it okay to be a year early on Flores, or maybe 2 years early on Flores, if 6-year-old is your answer for the next, and this sounds ridiculous, but if he's the answer for the next 15 to 20 years? I mean, wouldn't it be amazing if the Cardinals had a situation similar to the Patriots and before this season, the Seattle Seahawks, where you're talking about the only way they're turning over their staff is by their coordinators getting hired for head coaching positions, and that, you know, they're 10 plus year tenured coaches? That doesn't happen in the NFL. And with Flores, you're talking about a guy that has that look and that pedigree. And I know people in the Patriots building want him to be the guy that succeeds Belichick. And I think, to me, that's what speaks highest, is that, like, New England is saying, this is the guy we want. So, I mean, we're talking about replacing the greatest coach in the NFL history, and New England saying that's the guy. I mean, obviously it's not Robert Kraft. Obviously it's not coming from the top, but that's
who. Those are whisperings within the organization, kind of like Jimmy Garoppolo was the guy that Belichick said, gosh, he's going to be good, but they just couldn't keep him because of Tom Brady. This could be the chance to do that. Of course, who he brings becomes of extreme importance as well. We don't know any, like, what is he philosophically? What is he philosophically defensively? Is he a 3-4 guy? They play that defense there in New England, where they're very, very fluid, but what is his philosophy? What does he see? Is he a blitzer? Is he too deep? You come with so many questions. I think he'd be an exciting one, but at the same time, like, is he the next Bill Belichick? Wait. The problem is he Bill Belichick in Cleveland or is he Bill Belichick in New England? Because even Belichick, you know, greatest coach of all time, he did good things with Cleveland, but he was by no means a world beater.
Right. He wasn't Bill Belichick. And so that's what it boils down to is, you know, his philosophy, but who does he align himself with? I mean, he's not going to be able to bring in Josh McDaniels and Matt Patricia. What's he bringing in? Who are his, you know, who are his guys? And when you look at that, and when you look at kind of, it's kind of like the USC quarterback thing. It's kind of like, you know, the Alabama running back in the pros thing. Like, you get concerned because it's not like the Patriots coaches that have left have had the best experiences, right? So now all of a sudden you're like, ugh. Like, but I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Flores feels different than every other coach.
He does. See, he brings that level of intrigue and there's just a little bit different buzz about him.
And I think it's the most, in terms of everything, I think it's the most dangerous hire simply because, like you said, yeah, his background speaks ability within in football, but man, you are going out on a huge limb because he doesn't even have that year of experience that in Cleveland as an OC. I mean, his play calling is limited to red zone trips for the New England Patriots, right? Like, so you're going out on a limb here with a hire like that. But, you know, you wonder if that's a better play than playing it safe with like a Mike Munchak. And I think you hit it on the head. Munchak's not a bad hire by any means. Safe hire. Like it feels like the, okay, at worst, we're going to be right where we are right now, 7-9, 8-8. And we can sell that to fans that we're a piece away. Whereas, let's be honest, John DeFilippo or Brian Flores, or even the last guy that we're going to talk about, you're like, that is a wild swing, and it could be a miserable, miserable failure.
And coming up next on Rise Up Sea, we're going to wrap up the show talking about the other candidate, Steve Wilks. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. Back on Rise Up Sea Red, Steve Wilks, defensive coordinator for the Panthers, has had his hat in the ring for several interviews, but seems to have lost some steam a bit, even here locally, as originally it looked like it was Shermer Wilks. Now, I mean, as we were saying, Wilks might be number three. He is a guy who has 1 year as a coordinator, but not just as a coordinator, but assistant head coach. So the Carolina thought that much about him. Ron Rivera thought that much about him. Ron Rivera speaks glowingly of Wilks. But again, there are definite questions about him and his. Yeah, for me, one of the biggest things is you imagine that he's going to put together a solid defense. However, if he comes to Arizona, he's going to change this defensive philosophy. You would have to imagine that they would change them to a 4-3, which does shift some personnel around a little bit, for good or for worse. You'll see that you talked about the production at linebacker that they gotten from guys, you know, Keekly and Thomas Davis and the other kid that they got. And so you'd say that's going to be really good for the production of Daniel Buchanan and Hassan Reddick. But then you go, well, Marcus Golden, where does he fit? Chandler Jones, who had his best year, had more, arguably the best year of any defensive player in the NFL in 2017. How did he do it? It was the second year playing outside linebacker. He cut weight. And unless they're going to push him to, say, the Von Miller position as an off-the-ball linebacker, or are they going to have him bulk up again a little bit to play down as a down lineman again? it's going to be, or maybe he could do the same thing, but maybe he could do the same thing while playing at the same width that he is. You feel confident about the defense, but you likely don't have Betcher around. You're going to change the defensive philosophy, and well, the whispers were that DeFilippo would be the coordinator, which perhaps, I mean, that's exciting.
And maybe that's why they're bringing him back in for a second interview. I mean, maybe that is why. Maybe they want to know it's not just Wilkes' second interview if he gets one. Maybe it's DeFilippo as the OC, and they're saying, hey, what is your process, and would you be willing to see it out over 2 years? Because that's the other thing that you worry about with Wilkes, if he does bring in a John DeFilippo as his offensive coordinator. And in 1 year, and we're not even talking about turnaround becoming, you know, Eagles-like on offense. We're talking about, you know, if they are competent, and if they get a, let's just throw a name out and say a Lamar Jackson at 15, and he turns out to be and John DeFilippo's, he's going to get the credit for it if that happens. Is he going to stick around to see year two, or is he going to bail? And that's the other thing is, you know, again, Keim isn't exactly looking to Wilkes and then immediately have to replace his OC in after year one. They're going to want maybe, you know, obviously your coordinator's hired. That's a good thing. That means you're a good team, but you still want to see some before it happens. And, you know, a la the Minnesota Vikings, who are now in the NFC Championship, a la the Philadelphia Eagles, who are in the NFC Championship. You know, you don't want to playoffs and then lose John DeFilippo and go, oh crap, where are we going now? So, that's an interesting question to ask. Again, we don't even really know who's interviewing for the second time. But Wilkes is interesting because you have to wonder, and again, my buddy brought this up, is he going to be a guy that brings his philosophy, which is kind of a Tampa 2 defense, into Arizona? Because I'll be honest with you, the Cardinals definitely have the front 6-7 to play a Tampa 2. I don't know if they have the back end to play a Tampa 2, and that includes Buda Baker and Tyrann Mathieu. I just don't know if that's where they would excel. It becomes, do they, is Wilkes amenable to change, a la a Mike Tomlin, who came from, you know, a similar background in terms of defensive philosophy, and then obviously changed his philosophy, stuck with Dick LeBeau for a number of years, and allowed LeBeau to be the defensive mastermind of the Steelers still while Tomlin was the head coach. So those are the questions that you have with Wilkes, is because if you're gonna make wholesale changes to the defensive philosophy, and by the way, we saw how bad the defense was when they were a zone team. Now Tampa 2 and the zone that James Betcher was running are different. They're vastly different. And the Cardinals do have the athletes at linebacker to play that Tampa 2 with the linebackers dropping into coverage. Buchanan and Reddick are athletic enough. I wouldn't say it's their best asset, but they definitely have the athletic ability to do so. The question becomes then, you have a lot of money invested in that back end. And one, that's not Patrick Peterson's best use. We know that. I mean, it's not. It's going to be an issue. I don't think Peterson will complain or anything, but you're paying him $15 million a year to play zone. That was part of the reason that they didn't want to re-sign Josh Norman in Carolina, was because they felt comfortable that they could replace the production he stopped, so to speak. And so, you know, is that do you invest in cornerbacks that heavily in that type of defense? So it's going to bring about change, obviously, and not just from the coaching perspective, but from a philosophy of defense perspective. Or again, would Wilkes be amenable and change himself to fit what is a strong Cardinals defense?
And that brings, obviously, you know, kind of my questions for across the board. Which of these guys will want to be the man on their side of the ball? Are there any of these who want to call plays, or are they going to turn that over to the coordinators? In probably the majority of the cases, I would be probably much more amenable, unless you have, you know, a Bruce Arians type guy who's been calling plays his entire career, to do that. But, you know, we've talked a solid almost hour on the show, and what do we know? We just know that there's a lot of questions. We don't know who the Cardinals like more. We don't know who's in the lead. We suppose a couple of things, but still, you know, we are 2 weeks into this whole head coaching search. I believe it was January 17th when Bruce Arians was hired, 5 years ago, and we are not. Things could change, but it doesn't look like the Cardinals are close. That they really want to talk to these candidates again before they make their decision.
Yeah, and I think for me, like if you're saying these four are the guys, I think for me, I really like the idea of either Flores, if he's, you know, not going to be the coach, or, you know, calling plays, as you said. And I like the idea of no, he's not going to call plays. Now, I'm not overly excited about who he would want to bring in. That's just that's not who you know, really want. But, you know, he's not going to be worrying himself with be really focused on calling, or, you know, getting the team ready to go. I love the idea of John DeFilippo. I really do. I have no idea how he fits in here. And so that's, you know, I think you hit it on the head to open the show. The guy that fit everything would get you excited and you felt the most comfortable with, and maybe comfortable is a bad way to describe it, but you felt the best about, was Pat Shurmur. And, you know, he'd want to be here as much as he wants to be in New York. More power to him. Good luck. And now it becomes, who do the Cardinals feel like is not just the guy for the next 5 years, but hopefully the guy for the next 15 years. And that's really the key to this, is you're looking at this from a broader long-term view, as opposed to the unfortunate Arians at a, you know, at an older stage for coaches and then losing him quickly. So,
and with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, episode 181. The coaching search continues. Thank you all for listening. As always, pay attention to what we're doing. You can find us everywhere. We're featured on Revenge of the Birds, featured on Cards Wire, Block Talk Radio, Audio Boom, and all the different ways that you can access podcasts. Make sure you subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher Radio. That way they're delivered right into your list of podcasts to listen to. Hopefully we got news by the time we talk again next week. If not, we will probably start delving, which makes it a little difficult. We got to get the coach hired so we can start talking about players and free agency, because we'll have a better picture as to what to expect moving forward. But on behalf of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Roots. We're done with this episode. Go Cardinals. Rise up Sea Red. Rise up Red Sea. Be Red, Sea Red. All those good stuff. Hopefully we got a coach by the time we meet again next week. Thanks, guys.